Welcome into the Hawks Talk Podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks. As always, Ian Binky, Megan Robinson, Allie Wenskowski rocking with you here for another edition of Hawks Talk. And it's been a very busy week, really different from last week where we were talking about just one game. Now we've got seven to talk about because the Nighthawks are in a stretch of 13 days with 15 games and we're right in the middle of it. But you got to feel pretty good about it because coming in, you feel if you can split this just going right around 500, either 8-7, 7-8, you feel pretty good about it. Right now, the Hawks are 3-4 over the stretch and some good performances and a little bit of recency bias, some not as good. But what are your thoughts on the last week?
Yeah, I think it's been quite a challenge. I mean, the team is playing just so much in such a short span that they're going to get tired. And I think we're starting to see that now, which is what we'll talk about in a little bit with the last few losses. But like you said, I think if they go around 500, they'll be fine. I just don't think they have the attitude of that right now. I feel like they still have the beginning of the season where like every game is a must-win game. And while that is true, that's not what's going to be happening.
Yeah, kind of to top off on Allie, like yesterday we did game six of the 15 stretch. And I think the guys and I think kind of everybody was saying how they were really tired yesterday.
They need an off day.
So, I mean, we have a couple off days coming up next week. But I think right now the morale is kind of at a standstill right now. And I just think the guys need to really keep it up, like, you know, just keep going, keep grinding. We're almost at the finish line of this and it's gonna get better, but right now it's a lot for everybody.
Talk about the Nighthawks are 3-4 over the stretch, and they have a game tonight in Keene as we're recording this. It'll be final by the time this gets put out there to all the listeners, but check Nighthawks social media and the website for a score and an update on that game. Also, the ESPN Plus broadcast, it will be archived to check that out. But let's look now at this last week because it was hectic. We started off, as we talked about last week on the podcast, with that interesting home game away from home against the Valley Blue Sox. That started off on the wrong foot here. It was a 4-1 loss, but it took 10 innings. It was a game they were competitive and right there and at the end, but just a costly miscue in the 10th inning burst it open for Valley, who got a road win at home.
Yeah, it did, and I think the team already was down in morale at that point. I think that was just such a tough loss to start off the year almost with that it was hard to come back from, but their morale was still high. It was still early. They only played, a game or a few games. They were still in it at that point, and they haven't even had a divisional opponent. So I don't think that's where morale is. I think now they're just tired, like you said.
No, I totally agree. Like, I think at the beginning of the season, they were definitely, ready to go.
Every day's opening day. Yeah. They moved past Valley fast, which was good.
Yeah. Positive performance is their DJ Pacheco, a three-hit game. That's the most hits in a game for a Nighthawk this season. Still early. Someone can top that with four or more potentially as we go on. And out of the bullpen, Tommy Kent was fantastic. Three and a third, no hits allowed. Just two walks and three strikeouts. He was awarded the player of the game afterwards. And the Nighthawks bullpen has been one of their biggest strengths this season, especially as of late. And kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but five scoreless innings against Sanford gave them a chance on Sunday. And that's something that could really serve you well as starting arms go later in the season. You figure they have more success, then the bullpen can really slam the door in close games.
The bullpen's been really good, like you said. It kind of been the story of the team so far. I mean, the bats always have to come to play, but it's really about shutting down the other team. I feel like the starters this year have been not hit or miss, because I wouldn't say anyone's done really bad, but they've been like moderate, average. But it's really been the bullpen that's come in and just been lights out, especially when the Nighthawks have a lead.
The team ERA in the bullpen right now as it stands, right around 2-2, which is really good, among the best in the league. Then we moved on to the home opener officially against the Bristol Blue Sox, and this went much – Then we moved on to the home opener against the Bristol Blues, and that went much better for the Upper Valley Nighthawks. 7-6 win, their first one-run game of the season, and it ended in a win. And, of course, you got to talk about the bullpen again, because Cal Culpepper and Halton Hardy were excellent. Hardy gets the save. Culpepper the win. But again, Upper Valley doing just enough to get the job done, and something they haven't done recently, hitting with runners in scoring position. It was a spot of strength in this game.
They were really putting things together. I mean, it's a good team like that. You're not always going to have home runs. I mean, we haven't even had one, so it's going to be the team that can put together a single and two singles or two doubles together, and that's the team that's going to just score the most amount of runs. And it came down to just one run. I mean, Bristol put up six, so in that situation, it's just who's more talkative at the bats.
I do agree. Just to kind of bring it back to Cal Culpepper, he is the right-handed pitcher from Southern Mississippi. He's really strong. Like, I don't know if you guys saw him warming up yesterday, kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but he's really strong, and I was talking to the coaches, and they put him in for a reason because they know that he gets the job done, and he has a really strong arm, and I think that'll – I mean, a lot of the pitchers do. Everybody's really strong in that department, but Cal is, like, he gets it going when he goes out in the field.
And it was important that he pitched so well, three scoreless innings with four strikeouts, because Upper Valley trailed in this game at one point by the score of 6-2, because Bristol got runs, a lone run in the fourth and five in the fifth, but then Nighthawks struck right back in the bottom of the fifth with four runs, able to tie it, and then get a run back after Jacob Keys got the first triple of the year for the Nighthawks in the sixth. Chris Worcester in the ninth spot drove him home, so Upper Valley showed resilience in this win, and that was something that shone through in the following day in a doubleheader against Sanford. Two big wins, the first doubleheader sweep for Upper Valley since a July doubleheader against North Shore back in 2021, and they won game one by the score of 6-1, and then game two, a come-from-behind victory, 4-2. We could kind of talk about these two teams, two games together. What were some performances that stuck out?
The Upper Valley Nighthawks did really well, just overall. I think they came into game one ready to go, doubleheader-wise, and they kind of shined throughout the whole game. I mean, they're only seven inning games because of the doubleheader, but still, I mean, they had the lead. And then, like you said, game two, they were behind, but morale was so high from the win before, and this was their first divisional games doubleheader that – this was the first chance to actually show the league that they're in it. The North Division doesn't hold anything on them. So just because they've been rained out three times earlier doesn't mean they're not going to come to win. So it showed resilience the second game that they were able to come from behind.
Yeah, and especially you look at game two. You cannot talk about that game without mentioning Andreles Pyamps.
Poppy.
He was, Poppy, as they call him. Absolutely fantastic. Eight strikeouts through four innings of work. Did not allow a run. He did work around some command issues, especially earlier in the outing. Did allow three walks and two hit batters, but No hits, which was the big thing there. He shut down a Sanford offense, which really found its stride after this doubleheader, and we'll talk about that more in the Sunday matchup. But he was really good. The bullpen in game one was really good as well, limiting Sanford's offense, and that was the key to success as it's been all season.
It certainly has. And those eight strikeouts with no hits, that is a stellar record for Poppy. I mean, eight strikeouts on its own in a game, that's a pitching highlight. But then you put with no hits, and there's just no words.
And Matt Zaguro and Nate Kreider got the job done in game one for Upper Valley, combining for four scoreless innings. And you're really looking for more performances like that out of a bullpen when your offense is struggling to really keep you in a ball game. And you look at the bats here. This is the last time that Upper Valley found a whole ton of success, scoring 10 runs in the doubleheader, straining just eight men on base over the course of the two games. And they hit really well with runners in scoring position, coming through in critical spots, as well as converting on missed opportunities for Sanford. You look at game two, there was an error that extended the inning back in the sixth, and then coming through Ethan Lazama, a two-run single to put Upper Valley on top. They're really looking for more of that because they have not found it over this last stretch of three games.
Yeah, they are. And like you said, Lazama has been really good so far this season. I mean, what, he came in a week and a half ago, but not this whole season, but he's been one of the stars on the team. I think it's been near the end of the lineup that's really been putting things together, adding those singles together, or we've had a pair of doubles before, back-to-back. So I think him and just the bottom of the lineup, along with the bullpen, kind of has been carrying this team. And then going off the point you said, they scored 10 runs in those Sanford both victories. They only put up 8 runs in the last 3 games since then.
Let's look at those three games right now, a little bit fresher in the mind, but you started off with another home game against the reigning champion in the Newport Goals. You dropped that one 8-4, but a game that you were right in it. Unfortunately, the Nighthawks ran a team record 16 runners on base, just not getting it done with runners in scoring position in particular. You had 19 chances, but just 4 hits, and not a whole ton of them scored any runs.
Yeah, they were really in that game. I mean, they played well, I thought. I didn't think they played that bad. It just came down to they weren't able to put their runners on and make them score.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and especially talking with the coaches about the players' performance, was the guys can't make communication errors, especially when they're on defense, because that's when they'll make mistakes and allow for the other team to get runs, get scores, and we just can't let that happen. We also have to get more strikes. You can't win games if you're not getting scores or getting strikes, which is the name of the game, but that's how it goes.
And the Nighthawks kind of strung one of the two together here because the pitching was solid in the fact that they did not walk a Newport goal. Between Matt Brown, Nick Tamburo, and Frank Saccone, who was electric out of the bullpen to round this game out in the last three innings, they did a really good job of keeping Sanford or keeping Newport off the free passes, including Saccone, who sat him down in order, 9 up, 9 down, to end the ball game. But the offense just did not get the job done. Aside from the bottom of the order, Chris Ballardson, Ethan Lazama, Jacob Keys, Michael Ballard here, the 6, 7, 8, 9 batters. They were responsible for driving in all four runs for Upper Valley. Two doubles off the bat of Ballardson and Lazama, and then a multi-hit game for Jacob Keys in the 8th spot. They just didn't get the production at the top of the order to keep things going.
No, they didn't. Keys was a key to the game. I've been waiting to say that since you started talking. But yeah, like I said, the bottom of the order put it together. You had the back-to-back doubles, and that's really all you needed. But in a situation like that, it really does come down to that's all you need. Typically, you just need a few players to put it together back to back in the lineup, or a few back to back. But again, it's not going to work if the other team puts up 8.
Again, 16 runners left on base, 10 in scoring possession for Upper Valley in the ball game, including leaving the bases loaded in 2 of the first 3 innings. They look for more success the next day in game 1 of the Governor's Cup, but did not come. 13 runners left on here, going 1-for-15 with runners in scoring position in a 4-2 loss.
Not a good stat. I think the Vermont game was when the team started not their decline, because they're not doing bad, okay? It's the beginning of this season. Just because they have 3 straight losses doesn't mean anything. I mean, me and Megan were talking to Noah Boffman, and he was saying, you have to think about it in perspective. I mean, just because they lost 3 games doesn't mean anything. It's like a 40-game season and a 15-game stretch. So as long as they can come back from this, they're not in trouble. I just think Vermont was the first time they started to not have as high morale in the dugout, and that may have contributed.
Yeah, I think I do agree. I don't think it's like a decline, because we are still pretty early on. But Noah was saying that they had 29 guys on, and we just can't have that happen throughout games. And that's something I think the communication has improved, but now it's like I said earlier, you got to get strikes. You got to just be more accurate, even though I know they're all trying their hardest. But
yeah, ahead in the count is what Noah Boffin was saying. Their pitchers haven't been getting ahead in the count, and that's something he really wants to see in the future.
Yeah.
For the pitchers in this game, Chris Mattioli and Holton Hardy were solid, especially when you consider they're facing a Vermont offense, which is the most prolific in the NECBL so far this season. Holding them to just four runs, and Mattioli, he had two inherited runners to Hardy score after he left the ball game, but he was strong in the early going. Three scoreless innings until Max Jensen struck for a solo homer in the fourth, and that proved to be really a point which Vermont did not look back. But the pitching strong again. Halton Hardy tying a team singles, a single performance high with eight strikeouts with Pie Amps. He was really good in relief aside from back triples and three batters, two triples in the span of three batters in the eighth inning for Vermont to pad the lead. But the offense just kind of spun their tires in this game, couldn't get anything going off of a strong pitching performance from the Vermont Mountaineers. But all's not in vain here, Nighthawks fans, because you look at the Governor's Cup in history, the seven times it's been awarded. Just three times has the team who won the first game lifted the cup at the end of the year, including two of the three times that Upper Valley won it.
Yeah, and that's a huge stat. I mean, there's still so much more to play, especially later in the season. I feel like a lot of the games, I mean, we look at the schedule. We have two games on June 30th, a doubleheader for them. So I feel like they just need to take a deep breath, Upper Valley. And the Governor's Cup is such a long ways away, but it's still something that should be in the back of their minds.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's still, like we said earlier, it's still early. The guys are figuring out what works for them and what doesn't. Because, mind you, they all haven't played together, and this is, like, their first time.
They're gelling.
Yeah. This is the time where they should figure that out, not later in the season.
And then we move over to yesterday's ball game, which was a 3-0 loss to the Sanford Mariners. First time the Nighthawks have been shut out this season. They just ran into a buzzsaw of the Sanford pitching staff.
Yeah, they certainly did. I think it just really came down to that they couldn't hit and they couldn't do what they've been doing so far, which is putting those hits together. I mean, like you said, first time being shut out, and there was no scores for either side since the top of the fourth. So when you're in that kind of ball game, I think morale can go down because it's just zeros across the scoreboard and it's kind of just monotone. I mean, three up, three down, and there's not a whole lot left to say.
And it also didn't help that they're facing the pitchers that they faced back in that doubleheader against Sanford, and they found success against the likes of Chris Gallagher and Connor Griffin in game one to expand on a lead and end up scoring six in that game, but just was not the same here. Gallagher and Trish combined for four scoreless innings to close the door, and they just couldn't get much of anything going. Griffin getting the save in a 3-3 down ninth inning. Hawks just twice had chances to hit with runners in scoring position and 0-2 in those spots.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't really have their spots, like you said. I mean, you can't expect them to go 2-for-2 with runners in scoring position. That's just such a low stat. I mean, I think the Nighthawks just couldn't really hit off the pitching.
Yeah, I thought, like, when the game started yesterday, there was action definitely in the first through the fourth inning, and then it was just a stalemate the rest of the game. And like I was taking notes by our dugout, and I could just hear the guys' conversations, and it was just not, they were not in a good mood about it, especially Posse was not happy about it.
Well, yeah.
But you look at positive performances here because there were quite a few. Cole Fellows, another multi-hit game for him. He's got three now this season. He went 2-for-4. And then once again, the bullpen, fantastic. Cal Culpepper, four innings of hitless relief with three strikeouts. Nate Kreider coming in the ninth, adding on another. So five scoreless innings, holding down a Sanford offense, hitless over those last five innings after they struck for three in the first four innings off of starter Joey Purcell. And that's going to be, again, another strength of this bullpen to slow down offenses, not just shutting the door late, but maybe in the middle of a ball game, if you have a starter that gets hit around a little bit, you could do a good job of stopping that and giving your offense a chance, like Kyle Culpepper and Nate Kreider did.
Kyle Pepper really was strong. I mean, and yeah, the bullpen has been really strong. I'd argue one of the best in the league so far. I mean, it just comes down to the last few games. The batting just couldn't match up.
I do have to bring it back to one player real quick, Carter Jagiela.
We followed him around yesterday.
He's doing a great job. He really knows how to get the job done. He's been taking a beating back there, and I think the coaches put him in there for a reason because he knows. I think he's really communicating well with the pitchers, and I think that is going to work out well for the end of the season.
Yeah, he's a strong catcher.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We'll look for more strong performances ahead. We'll take a quick timeout here on the Hawks Talk podcast. When we come back, we'll be joined by a couple of guests here. And after that, we'll take a look at the week ahead. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back into the Hawks Talk podcast. We are now joined by the GM of the Upper Valley Nighthawks, Matt Wright, and pitcher for Upper Valley in Dylan McCarthy. And guys, welcome down here.
Thanks for having us in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Unique experience for you, Dylan, playing for a team like Upper Valley right in your backyard. What's it like?
It's amazing. Being able to see my family every night and have my mom's cooking every night is definitely amazing. Being able to play really, really good baseball, like you said, in my backyard is definitely a blessing. So I'm excited, and the summer's been great so far. So,
how did you find out about the Nighthawks? Was it when you were younger, since you're sort of a hometown kid, or was it now?
So when I was really, really young, I know this team's sort of new, but when I was, I mean, I probably like 11, 10 years old, we'd go watch some of the Swamp Bat games. And then last summer I was recovering from an ACL injury, and I know Sturgeon was here. He was the old pitching coach here, who I actually worked with like one-on-one a lot of the time. And so he was like, hey, like whenever you get the chance, like, I think it'd be a great fit for you to be able to play there. Great competition, amazing coaching, great environment. It's fun. It's close to home. And so kind of I came to watch a few games, talked with Matt a little bit. He's known me since I don't even know how old. But my dad coached him. He's coached me when I was in like I was probably like, 13, 14 years old, and I played Legion. He coached me then, so we kind of had that connection already, so that helped out a little bit. And so last summer I'd come watch some games while I was recovering from an ACL injury, and they'd be like, hey, like we want you next year, we need you. And once I got on campus at George Mason, I talked to my coaches, and they're like, no, that's an amazing fit, like that'll be perfect for the summer, like we're all for it. Got the contract, signed it, boom, ready to go. So I mean, I love it here. I'm excited. It's been an amazing summer, great coaching, great environment, and it's just fun to be home again.
That's awesome.
What's been your favorite thing being around the guys the last couple of weeks?
I think it's cool. I mean, being the only guy that's from here, I kind of know the area a little bit better than everyone else. So being able to just kind of tell the guys about the area, they're not used to it, explain kind of the ins and outs of things. Seeing the smiles on the other players' faces when they try the maple creamy is kind of cool. I mean, it's the best ice cream around. It's phenomenal. So I think that's kind of cool. It's a fun environment. And just, like, having good baseball in Vermont. I love seeing, like, kids that I do pitching clinics with or kids that know who I am from towns over. Just being at the games, like, signing autographs. I think that's amazing to have all these kids look up to these, like, amazing players. Because I was them at one point. So being able to kind of give back and like see it from the other side now, I think it's amazing. It's really fun. So
Matt, kind of your perspective on this whole thing. I mean, you're one of the biggest pieces in putting this roster together, and you now have a personal connection with one of the players. How has that kind of changed your outlook on building the roster this year?
Yeah, I think. You know, bringing Dylan in was one of the first things we had talked about. For anybody familiar listening or anybody local, we had Jordy Allard play for us for 3 years, who was a Hartford native, which was a big draw for us. It brings a lot of fans into the park, and this was, you know, something we talked about well before we decided to, you know, put the roster together for this year. You know, we wanted to really you know, bring that community aspect back, and we want to expand our reach in the region too. And just having that personal connection was kind of an added layer to it for me. It wasn't, you know, intended that way. But Dylan's, you know, Dylan's parents I've known for, you know, as long as he has, basically. You know, I met them right around when he was born. So his dad was a pretty influential person in my life, you know, when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old, when he first started coaching in Springfield. So to have that kind of come full circle now, to see him, you know, go through the ranks. And as all of you know, like, Vermont doesn't produce a lot of high level baseball players. So to watch his journey, watch him, you know, grow and get stronger and end up at a Division I program was pretty impressive. And, you know, we knew the genes were good. His dad was a good athlete in college. So it's been cool to, you know, to see it come around and have him here with us and, you know, really bring the community together. And that's what it's all about. Like he said, it's about bringing people from different areas together, and not just the Upper Valley, but now we're bringing in, you know, Springfield, Chester, Bellows Falls, towns that have followed him, you know, throughout his time. And you know, that's just going to make our reach stronger. And that's you know, aside from him being a great pitcher, you know, that's the other aspect is, you know, we want good players on our team. So that's, you know, another layer that made it, you know, a no-brainer to bring him in as part of our pitching staff. So it was kind of a, you know, a home run, you know, as far as, you know, building our roster, but also, you know, making that community outreach stronger, which is, you know, what we're about here in the Upper Valley.
Or I guess more of a strikeout, since he is a pitcher.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Matt, I feel like a lot of people don't really know what a GM does besides maybe building the roster. Can you explain what your day-to-day job is for a game?
Yeah, so as far as game days are concerned, our job is pretty easy when the season starts, because all the work happens before the season. So the 10 months leading up to what everybody sees day-to-day is kind of where all the work happens. So the roster building, the hiring of staff, the sponsorships, the scheduling of community outreach and partnerships, and all those things are happening between, you know, August when our season ends until the following May and June. So we really try to get everything done ahead of schedule, so when the game starts, and it's really just, you know, kind of a plug and play situation where we just let things come together. And it's a lot of supervision, but a lot of kind of, I'd say, going on the fly. If things come up, if things happen, if we have issues, then, you know, we correct them. But we try to put the pieces in place where we don't have those things happen. And this year we've seen how good recruiting can pay off with that, as far as the staff and the, you know, the players and the coaching is concerned. It's a really well-oiled machine. That's not something you see everywhere. So I think we're thankful to have a good group, you know, that makes our job easier. So we're really... For me, it's getting to the field and just knowing that, okay, things are going to go smooth and not much to worry about. And just kind of being someone who is there for either advice or just to help with any issues that come up. That's really the biggest thing for me during the season is to, you know, handle anything with the staff or any logistical things that come up. For example, with our, you know, our longer trips, bus trips, ferry trips to Martha's Vineyard and such,
fishing
boat trips. I have to, you know, handle all that stuff. But those are minor compared to all the work that comes beforehand with recruiting players and the staff and sponsorships and host families, which are, you know, crucial to what we're doing.
So, Dylan, you made your debut during the last week on the road against Sanford. What was it like getting out there on the bump?
It was definitely nice. I had a great fan base in Maine. I had a few families there that had their daughters had basketball in Maine, so they came early to watch me. Both my parents were there. My brother was there. My grandfather was there. It was nice to be out back on the mound again. Definitely a little rusty. It's been a little bit. Didn't get many innings as a freshman coming off of an injury. So that's kind of where the coaching staff and I at school talked about, like, getting good innings in, getting that feel back, being a starter again, coming off of injury. Just being able to be out there again was definitely nice. Had a good second inning, kind of got a little tired in the third, but just things we can work on. It's all a learning experience. That's kind of how the summer goes, is you'll have your ups and downs, but you're going to learn from every pitch, every out, every inning. It's definitely a blessing to be out there, and it was nice. It was nice. It's a great stadium, great environment, good team too. So.
And you talked a little bit earlier about working with some pitching clinics. You actually just came to us to the podcast today from a really unique experience working with former Nighthawk pitching coach Chad Sturgeon, someone that you've worked personally with, but also a former Major League Cy Young Award winner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rick Purcell is actually a good family friend of ours. He moved to the area. He coached this past year Londonderry Middle School team. Did a great job there. But like I said, yeah, he's a family friend of ours. He's in the winter. We'd go throw in a gymnasium because obviously we can't be outside when we're around here.
It's Vermont.
So he'd come when I'd throw bullpens and stuff. And then I work with Chad a little bit too. But, yeah, we've got a bunch of guest coaches and stuff. We've got the Keene State coach, Leif Bigelow, who's another – he's from Brattleboro. He played Division I ball, very, very good schools. Yeah, it's a great – there's got to be – I mean, there's 40, 50 players at this camp. It's Monday through Thursday, and it just – I mean, it's fun. It's being – all these kids get out on the field. They get to have fun. They get autographs from a Cy Young pitcher. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. So, yeah, it's a great time. That's kind of how my summers look so far. I'll work my normal job. I'll do one-on-one lessons, pitching lessons with kids around here. And then I'll come to practice or games and have some maple creamies and have fun watching good baseball and stuff. So, yeah.
Dylan, you're supposed to be starting again this week, and it should be a home game. What does that mean to you? Is the whole family coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I know my first start, without the rain delays, was supposed to be a home game. Now actually getting started at home will be awesome. I know I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of texts saying, oh, we're going to be there. We're going to be there. So I'm expecting a big fan base. I think it's amazing. Not only for myself, I appreciate all of the support I get in this area, but having all these people at these games, hoping that they'll watch not only me pitch, but come back and watch other kids pitch, because we have a phenomenal staff. We have a great team. But it means a lot. I know my whole family will be there. They do everything to be at every single game, which I'm very appreciative of. I've got a great family, so I can't complain at all. But, yeah, I'm really excited to pitch at home. I think we played here in Legion when I was younger. We played on this field. I can't remember if I pitched or not.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was a while ago. But, I've thrown off this mound multiple times just – getting my work in and stuff with Chad when I'd work over the summer and stuff. But I love this place. It's a great environment, and it's fun to be around. And having my family there means a lot. So,
Kind of bringing it back to your roots of growing up, you were a multi-sport athlete in high school. You did soccer, baseball, and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
For you, did you always just know that baseball was the one sport for you?
So growing up, when I was in like elementary school, everyone I talked to, I was like, I'm going to play in the NBA one day. I mean, just like every other kid, like you want to play like a professional sport. But I loved basketball. Basketball was my favorite sport until probably my eighth grade year. I was like, I travel a little bit for baseball. Like, I kind of like this. Basketball is like, it's a lot of running. Like, I don't know. And I think kind of that eighth to ninth grade year, I realized like, hey, I think baseball is my thing. Like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to start traveling more. I'm going to put the work in. And I'm going to just do whatever I can to make a name for myself. Like, I love the sport. Like, it's not about like, oh, you play Division I baseball. Oh, you play like, I love playing baseball, right? That's kind of where I'm at with it. And I want to play as long as I can. And yeah, like you said, I played multiple other sports. And if there's kids listening to this, that's my biggest advice to any kid. Play as many sports for as long as you possibly can. That's what makes you an athlete. Like, if you want to focus on one sport, absolutely do that. That was me. Like, growing up, I was like, I'm going to focus on baseball, but I'm going to play as many sports as possible because I know that'll make me a way better athlete. And I think for kids nowadays, they see like, oh, like, I got to play baseball like every single day for the rest of my life. Like, no, go shoot a basketball, go throw the football. Like, that'll make you so much better at baseball than just focusing on that one thing every single day. Like, go have fun, enjoy your like childhood and stuff. And I think that's what makes me enjoy baseball now, is like knowing that I got my time to play every sport I ever wanted, and now I can really focus on this one sport now. But yeah.
So Matt, I mean, we talked about building the roster, but you also had to build a roster of interns here for this season. And, I mean, a much bigger team this year from what we had last year with the Nighthawks. I mean, it was just like a two-person broadcast team. Now we've got five, including sideline reporters and Allie and Megan over here to my left. What went into the decision of expanding the roster of interns and also the talent that you brought in?
Yeah, I think, you know, the league kind of sets standards for, you know, what we want to accomplish as a group with 13 teams we have. Because at the end of the day, we are competing against each other, but it's important that we're all on the same page as far as the content we're putting out, the game day experience we're giving, the rosters we put on the field. We want them to live up to the standard of this league, which as far as across the country is very, you know, well known. And I think what we were lacking in as a league is the staff component with the game day staff, the media staff, the broadcast staff. The analytics are a big thing in baseball now. And we really wanted to sit down and say, okay, what can we do to make it better? We want to get better every year. We don't want to stay stagnant. We don't want to take a step back. We want to continue to set the bar with our staff. This year being having the, you know, the biggest analytics group with five people, having Devin and Catherine doing our mental performance. We're the only team that has a mental performance coach on staff. And I think things like that were important to us to say, okay, we're going to set the bar and then other teams can follow us, which we've done in the past with, you know, videographers and such in the last couple of years. Of course, there's limitations to that too. We have, you know, we don't want to overstaff and we only have so much housing that we can provide. And I think this year we kind of found the sweet spot. I think we have all of our bases covered. Like you said, we have a much bigger group than last year. I think we added maybe six or seven additional people in total between all the groups. So it's been a different experience for everybody. There's a lot more people around on game day. And I think we're all learning together. We're all learning how to manage that and how to make that machine work in the best way possible. You know, and we have all summer to do that, to perfect it. But it's made our jobs a lot easier. You know, Noah and myself and the coaches have a lot more resources now, and it's allowed us to give our fans a better experience, our players a better experience. And that's what we're all about. We, you know, at the end of the day, this is a selfless job for all of us involved. You have to make a lot of sacrifices. And I think it's just a part of what we do. You have to love doing it, and you have to, you know, really enjoy spending the day at the field, whether it's as a player or staff. It's a unique experience to be here and to go through the grueling summer. You know, for the players, it's 44 games in about 9 weeks. For us, it's, you know, 2 months of baseball every day, and it's a lot. And I think the staff we have this year has really risen to that challenge. I think it's become evident that we're still setting the bar for the rest of the teams in the league, and that's the standard we want to hold ourselves to.
And for you, Dylan, the team got a win in your first start, and that was thanks in large part as well to the bullpen coming in and doing a great job. That's been really one of the best parts of this team this year has been the bullpen, right around a 2 ERA for the season. How critical is that to you as a starter, knowing that you have a bunch of great arms behind you that could follow up?
That just comes down to trust, right? Like, when you go in and you start a game and you're like, I got to do my job, and then you know for a fact that the people coming in after you are absolutely going to do their job, that takes so much stress off of you as a starter, right? I mean, we have a phenomenal staff. You look down, it's just a great staff. And I mean, they're not only are they good at pitching, they're great guys. Like, we have a great environment in the bullpen. Like, it's fun to be there every single day. But yeah, absolutely. Knowing that, like, hey, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do my job, I'm going to do what I need to do, and then I'm going to give it to the next guy, and he's going to do exactly what he needs to do, it's huge. Like, that's the environment in the staff that you want, and they've done a phenomenal job of that. I mean, if you think about it, you bring in a ton of college guys that some know each other, some don't, and you put them together, and then it's essentially like an all-star team almost, right? And then you just know that your guys are going to do what they need to. And so having that trust in each other, I mean, we've grown a pretty good bond over the 2 weeks that we've been here. So being able to have the trust in each other already, I mean, it just, you go out and you have fun. And they do a great job. So,
and I think just a second that is, you know, a big part of our roster building is to bring in good people. We've always emphasized good guys first, good players second, which is hard to do. It's hard to find, you know, guys that fit that mold in both ways. You hear a lot of, unfortunately, you know, horror stories around the league of players that either have a toxic environment or they go home because they don't enjoy themselves or whatever it may be. And we really try to, you know, develop these relationships with coaches, whether it be at George Mason or St. Joe's or Kentucky, wherever we get players from, that they're going to send us good guys, which in turn, you know, we want them to make the stay for the summer and develop that bond. And, you know, if they perform on the field, that's even better. But we want guys who are going to represent us in the community and, you know, love the game of baseball. And that's what these guys do. And it seems like the group we have this year really resembles that, which makes, you know, every game day more enjoyable for us, knowing that those guys want to go out there and compete and just, you know, have fun. That's what it's all about. We're not here, you know, our goal when we set foot in the door first day of the season isn't to win a championship. If that happens, it's great. But our goal is just to improve every day. If we go out there and play the game and love the game, then it'll give back. You know, I think we all believe in the baseball gods in one way or the other. And, you know, one day we'll be on the right side of that and we'll, you know, we'll win that Faye Vincent Cup. But we have a good group here and we just need to, you know, keep doing what we're doing. We're, what, third in pitching right now, third in defense right now in the league. We have a couple things to improve on, but we're only 2 weeks in. You know, so I think we're in a good position, but I think we have a great group all around. I think it just makes for a good environment in that dugout.
And you could see the team at home three times this week, all in a row. Wednesday at home against Bristol, Thursday against Keene, and Friday against the Danbury Westerners, all 6 p.m. at the Maxfield Sports Complex. That's where you can see Dylan McCarthy go to work on the mound, and Matt Wright, you'll see his work out there on the field. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks again for having us on.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back on the Hawks Talk podcast. We now turn our eyes to the week ahead here. As we're talking, we're previewing a game against the Keene Swamp Bats, the third straight divisional opponent on the other side. That's on the road. We'll have a final score for you by the time this comes out. And we'll be able to kind of recap that on Nighthawks social media. But looking ahead here, that's the last divisional opponent. We'll see for quite a while the rest of the way. It's all Coastal and West Division foes. One of the longer trips of the season to Ocean State on Tuesday. And then finally, some home cooking for the Nighthawks. Four straight home games against the likes of Bristol. Then another home game against Keene, so they do mix them in there. But then Danbury, and then the doubleheader against Martha's Vineyard. Now that one, you split it home and home. So technically a home game, even though you do go down to Vineyard for that twin bill. But Nighthawks have to be really happy to avoid some bus trips over those 3 days.
They certainly do. I think because they don't get a break game-wise, that's going to be huge for morale, is a slightly less early start time and just getting more practice in. I mean, when we were talking to Carter, he was saying he doesn't do his early work on away games, so that could make all the difference for all the players. I think just a chance to breathe, even if they are playing, and then get in the right mindset for Vineyard, which is technically home, but they do have to travel so far, ferry, fishing boat, a lot of elements there. I think that can really set them in the right mindset, and they need it.
Yeah, the three home games that we're going to have this next week will give the guys time to rest, like you said, like not as an early start time. I think they'll be able to sleep in, hopefully, some of them.
I'd like to.
I know. I think we all would. But yeah, I think it'll be good for them to kind of get that little bit of extra rest. Hopefully they'll be good by Martha's
Home
Vineyard.
Home field advantage.
Yeah. Turning the attention to the game tonight against the Keene Swamp Bats in one of the smallest ballparks in the league, really only like 330 to center field. But how important is it to get a win tonight after losing two straight games to divisional opponents? You feel like you've got to get this one to get back at the level.
Yeah, it's a huge game. I mean, especially being a divisional game, that's just something that the Upper Valley really hasn't seen so far. I mean, they've played, what, four now divisional games, mm-hmm. but still they've spent a lot of their season not playing divisional opponents. And this one being close, again, I mean, what, about an hour drive? Yeah. Here, that's close. Okay, so they get a little bit extra rest. It's huge for the momentum going into Ocean State, but it's going to be a really tough one.
And you're looking at a Swamp Bats team that plays to the dimension of their ballpark. They lead the NECBL right now in home runs and slugging percentage. That is because they play in the smallest ballpark in the league. Fair. But the Nighthawks figure they can also take advantage of that. We've seen some drives to the gap that go down as just doubles or even triples. We've seen a few of those already this season, three of them to be exact. But those turn into long balls at Alumni Field in Keene. Expected to see a light show tonight.
Yeah, and the Nighthawks are still looking for their first home run of the season. I mean, we made a video like the first week that was like, oh, who's going to hit the first home run? And we still don't have an answer. I mean, we have had tough games, but I think it's finally time, and I do think we'll see it tonight.
I've been waiting patiently.
Well, the Nighthawks took a little bit of time to get their first stolen base, first double play turned up the season. Could see home run number one tonight, but that we will have to wait and see. Busy week ahead for the Nighthawks. They look forward to the off day next Sunday. It'll be a busy slate until then, but stay tuned to Nighthawks socials and, of course, the broadcast either on the NECBL Network or ESPN Plus, depending on the opponent. For my podcast partners this week, and as always, Allie Wenskowski and Megan Robinson, my name is Ian Binky. We'll see you next week on the Hawks Talk podcast. Till then, take care and have a good one.